You know that health is wealth, and ital is vital. They're not just some rhyming words, it's something that's just got to be heard. Who is responsible for your health? Look in the mirror, it's your very own self. You can't rely on nobody else. Health is wealth, ital is vital. Try and take care of yourself. Health is wealth, ital is vital. You can't rely on nobody else. Health is wealth, ital is vital. Try and take care of yourself. Health is wealth, ital is vital. You can't rely on nobody else.
And good afternoon, and welcome to another episode of To Your Health. To Your Health is a program designed not only to inform, but to also turn your life and health around. I am Dr. Theodore Watkins, the host of To Your Health, and I am joined, as always, by my able, trusty assistant and producer, Mr. Frank Smith. How are you doing, Brother Frank?
I'm doing well. I'm excited again.
Man, I'm excited because today we have a program that we've entitled Getting to the Root. Getting to the Root. Throughout this month, in honor of Men's Health Emphasis Month, we have been focusing on the most endangered sector of our population, the Black man. We began this series by challenging our men to step up and to reclaim their rightful place as leaders in their homes, their communities, and in the world. From there, Brother Frank, you remember we took a deep dive into the chronic diseases that are claiming the lives of our brothers at an alarming yet premature rate. We anchored our discussion last week in a simple truth, but a hard one, and that is you can't lead where you don't go, and you can't teach where you don't know. Today, we want to go deeper. We must look at the reality that we cannot separate our health challenges from our life challenges. Black men in America have faced, and continues to face monumental obstacles and those that have a burden on their life and health. To help us navigate these troubled waters and this journey and reach the root of these issues, I've invited a special friend. He calls me Uncle Teddy. I've known him just about all of his life. He graduated from college with my daughter. He even pastored the church that I was baptized in and grew up in. He's somebody I just hold in high regard. He's a man that I actually look to, even though he's younger than I am. Age of my daughter, I look to him for my understanding of myself. And I am honored to have him help guide and chart a path toward health for our Black men. Dr. Edmonds is the CEO and founder of the Winning Circle. The Winning Circle is a transformative coaching ecosystem, helping men experience breakthroughs, emotional healing, alignment, and a whole life success with his conviction that true success is simply the byproduct of a healthy, integrated lifestyle. He's driven by a deep burden to see men healed, whole, and winning in what matters most. Dr. Edmonds has dedicated his life to helping men strengthen their identity, their relationships, their emotional fitness, spiritual grounding, and leadership through retreats, mastermind groups, coaching and thrilling online communities, the Winning Circle gives men the tools, systems, brotherhood, accountability they need to thrive in areas that matters most: faith, family, career, and character. At the core, Dr. Edmonds Myron, I call, pastor sometimes, he believes that when a man heals, everything connected him to him gets better. That belief doesn't come from theory, it comes from experience. And we want to welcome you, Dr. Edmonds.
Oh, man, thank you so much.
Man, we've looked forward to this for a long time.
Yes, you know, yes, we have.
You know, even he's never been my personal pastor, but sometimes on a weekly basis, I would go and search his sermons. Because the brother always has had something to say. And then he actually left active ministry to focus on this men thing. Doc, you know, when we talk about this allostatic load, the stress of being a Black man in this society, the sheer weight of the challenge that we face, you know, how can we begin to deconstruct this so that it doesn't become a death sentence?
Mm. Lord have mercy. Oh, this is good. First of all, Doc, it's good to be with you. And if you and Brother Smith, thank you guys so much for having me on this platform. I want to also thank you all for doing what you're doing and for keeping this conversation before our people. Emphasis on our people. Uncle Teddy, Dr. Watkins, I text Kawana, your daughter, and I told her, I said, I love your father. And she said, why you say that? I said, because he cares about our people, emphasis on that. And I'll be honest with you. When I set out after pastoring for 25 years in Black congregations in the inner cities, where you have to constantly be faced with the reality of what systemic racism is doing to destroy our communities, it becomes a challenge. Honestly, I was challenged by people. Why don't you open up your men's ministry, your men's programs to all men? Well, I said, well, they're not closed to all men. why are you so focused on Black men? And I said, because nobody is focused on Black men. Mm. Very few people give us any attention. I got to tell you the story. This morning, I got a phone call from a relative who called me complaining about their own mama. And you know how Black men are about their mamas. We love our mamas. We protect our mamas. But he had to admit, he said, man, so much of what's wrong with me is because I have mama trauma. He said, my mama fell right into the societal expectations of teaching me bad manhood, not exposing me to strong men, keeping me from being around strong men, hovering over me instead of pushing me out of the nest, so to speak. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I want to answer your question by saying we have a challenge to really become the full expression of who God made us to be, both internally and externally. We are not just fighting white folks and racism. We are fighting our own maladaptive, unhealthy mindsets towards what it means to be a Black man in our own community. And so it becomes a double-edged sword. And I'll end by saying this. When I was in Ohio, pastoring in Cleveland, Ohio, your home city, man, there was a study done by the state, and they had declared that being Black was a public health crisis. That just being Black, and that certain zip codes were affected more than others. And you know, and I both know, that out of all black folk, the gender that pushed those numbers to crisis levels, what's happening with black men. Mm-hmm. So we got to talk about it. We got to talk about it.
So Doc, we talked this month about self-empowerment. Mm-hmm. Self-empowerment. So how does a person who has been constantly beaten down and told that he and his life doesn't matter, empower himself?
Huh. Oh man, this is just, I love this question. I'm gonna tell you why I love this question, because of how you framed it. We have to all admit, and I wish folks would give brothers a break, in the sense that from the time of 1619 and onward, there has been literally a diabolical and systemic design to destroy, to dehumanize black men. Period. I say this with respect. I don't know of any other population of men around the world where there has been a design by governments and by institutions to oppress black a certain population of people more than black men have. What happened with chattel slavery is the dehumanization of black men to the extent that it works so effectively that we now have generations of what I would say is the pathology of being a black man. Just by being a black man, it is almost a guaranteed premature death sentence, isn't it, Doc?
Wow. Yes, it is. It is. Mm-hmm. It is.
In every way, not just physical death, spiritual death, mental health death, all of these things, family death, it's diabolical. It's satanic, if you will, when you think about a population of people that has been more. You can't tell me, and I know people want to make this.
Is that on purpose? Is that on purpose?
Absolutely, absolutely. And so I wanna dig into this, because I really feel that it is crucial for the empowerment of black men. It cannot happen singularly by black men alone. This is going to require a community-wide effort from our people collectively to pull brothers up. We ain't coming up by pulling up ourselves by our own bootstraps. That's a lie. We've never done that. We didn't do that in Africa. And the only thing that makes us feel like we have to do things in an individualistic fashion is colonization and Eurocentric thinking that separates itself from community. And I even did a few little research when I got here and said, what are the main reasons why a black man will ever go get help? Pick one: physical health, mental health, using all the services that he is distrusting of. The number one reason and factor is community. Community, either his family, his children, a brotherhood of other men, his church congregation. Separate a brother from community and that brother will die. That is what I am coming to understand. When black men are isolated, black men die prematurely. And now they're dying four times more than anybody else by suicide.
That's amazing. You know, as you were talking, I was thinking, man, I never knew my dad. All right. And because we don't really talk, my mother never talked about what happened. You know, mm-hmm. I mean, they were married. He had actually four children. The first one died in birth, but three children, and then he split. You know, but it was that community of church members. I remember when Kiwana was in kindergarten at church, she came to me and asked me who growing up reminded me more of Christ. And I said, Brother Robinson. Brother Robinson was the first elder in our church. Mm-hmm. Big brother, you know, Pierre Louise's father, you know. But he was such a gentleman. And there were other brothers, you know. There was an Edmonds.
Yes, sir.
You know, at our church. And other men, Mr. Hill. I can look at these men. They took me. They taught me basketball, you know. Mm-hmm. They taught me to be a man, you know. So we need that community in order to succeed, you know. Mm-hmm. I remember I taught school one year, and I was enjoying teaching. Even though it was hard work, and teachers are an unappreciated segment of our community. And I told my mother, Mom, maybe I won't go into medicine. Maybe I'll teach. Mm. She said, Son, you've always said you wanted to be a doctor. Mm-hmm. Since age five, really. You know, I said, Mama, why are you trying to push me into medicine? She said, I'm not trying to push you. I'm encouraging you to do what you've always said you wanted to do. We need that encouragement.
You know? Yes.
Even though I wanted it, but deep in my heart, I said, it's so hard. People said it's, you know, it's only a few make it. You know, how can I? Project boy, welfare kid, how can I make it? You understand?
Oh, yes.
But
oh,
that
yes.
encouragement was what was so helpful to me. And so what you said about community is so critical. And we've been talking about blue zones and actually creating what we call a black blue zone, because most of the blue zones that have been recognized are not black. Mm-hmm. Although last week we talked about Frank, the black zone, because parts of Africa, you know,
that's right.
No diabetes, no hypertension, no heart disease, no cancer. You know, but we aren't taught about those things. You know, we're only taught about, you know, baboons and all kind of foolishness, you know. So that community piece, I think, is so critically important.
Yes. And I want to also, if I could just also add, I think it's community and it's also messaging. When you look at religions and organizations that are succeeding with men, they typically have a message of empowerment and not a message of man up. Let me tell you something. This man up message to me is not the kind of message that is going to position brothers for healing. Brothers don't need more achievement and more success. Brothers need healing. I really believe that when we get whole and we get healed, then success is no longer something that needs to be chased or pursued. It becomes a byproduct of being healthy and whole. You know, the scripture talks about, you know, I wish above all things that one would prosper and be in health, even as his soul prospers. You know, the emphasis in scripture is always health and healing. You know how a tree, a healthy tree will bear good fruit. You know, the Bible talks about in Psalms 1, that, you know, that whatever a man does will prosper. And all of this is within the context of being healthy, whole, and healed. That's why the message has to be one of healing and empowerment rather than, man, you need to get yourself together. Man, you need to clean up your act. Man, you need to stop impregnating all these women. That's what my cousin told me. He said his mama went off on him yesterday about what he needs to do and how he needs to step up. Well, that type of message to me, it has never been a message that has helped to bring about healing. All it does is bring about more pressure that a black man already has on him. I forgot the author's name, but one of the scholars that I read while I was doing my doctorate, the name of the book is called Black Fatigue. And he talked about John Henryism in there, Doc. That idea that, you know, that it was a story that they had made up, but it sort of described what happened with black men as we moved from the agricultural age to the industrial age, that there was a black man by the name of John Henry who could outwork machines.
Yes.
And we've carried that with us. the work ethic, the provider mindset. And I shook people up when I told them that the number one role and responsibility of a man is not to be a provider, but the number one role and responsibility of a man is to be a spiritual leader.
Yeah. Right?
And so when one begins to embrace that, you cannot lead spiritually if you are unhealthy, or else you are only going to bleed on people that didn't cut you. We don't need more beating up on black men. We need messages of empowerment, messages of identity. Who am I? Where do I come from? And when I begin to understand that, my behavior will fall in line. And so yeah, I get a little attitude sometimes when I go to our churches. And, you know, Mother's Day, you know, they're celebrating the women with tears and roses and nice meals. Now, we're getting a little bit better now, but, you know, you've been around. Y'all been around for a little while. But they have Father's Day. The preacher spends all this time talking about deadbeat dads and how he need to step up and take care of his responsibility. You see what I'm saying? It's like the message to women has always been one of affirmation and encouragement for mothers. But there's been very little of this for our black men. And the research has even shown this, Doc, that out of all the counterpart men in America, that black men, even though 70% of us are not in the home, which is true, they don't tell the whole story. The whole story is that black men are the most involved with their children out of any other of their counterparts.
Mercy. That's powerful, man.
You're not getting that message.
That's powerful. That is so powerful. You know, we need to recognize what I believe others recognize is how powerful we are. You mm-hmm. know, I believe that much of what we see is because of fear. Because, you know, when we've been allowed to, you know, as I've always been into sports. You know, I just knew that I was going to college on an athletic scholarship. and so I was into sports, and I would read the as a little boy, man, I would read the World Almanac. I knew all the records and so forth. I studied it, man. It was like every year I'm in the projects going buying the World Almanac. You know, but what I saw was that, you know, as a little boy, I remember there was a guy who was the number one quarterback in the country. He went to the University of Minnesota, and yet he was not allowed to play quarterback in the NFL. All right, they wanted him to play running back or defensive back, and so he had enough self-esteem that says, no, I'm a quarterback. And he went to Canada and played quarterback. But now that things have changed a bit, many, if not most of the top quarterbacks in the NFL are black. Now, what happened? Because they said the reason you can't play quarterback is because you're not smart enough. Quarterbacks have to be smart.
Oh, yes.
You know, and black men are not, you know, this is devastating, man.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, devastating. Mm-hmm. But you know, I took your class several years ago, and it was interesting. I signed up for your class, not for me. I signed up for your class because I wanted my son to take the class.
Uh-huh.
And so, you know, we both signed up.
Uh-huh.
But he paid his money in advance, and I didn't. I just, you know, was busy and waited. And when I went to pay, it was too late. And so I had to do the next class. But I was so happy it worked that way because he got to focus on him, and I got to focus on me.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And you said something in that class that I remember. You said that, you know, women, they talk to other women about their problems, all right? But that brothers seldom share with others, you know? And you said we need to get our starting five of people that we talk to. And then the number six man, the first one off the bench, needs to be our counselor. And that was so powerful to me, because at that point in time, I was not really in favor of talking to a counselor or anybody about, I can handle my own problems, you know? That's a bunch of garbage, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, you know, there are five relationships that I suggest that every man, especially a Black man, needs to have, you know, on his team, you know. And, you know, we talk about mentorship. One of them is that every Black man needs to have a coach or a mentor. He doesn't need to be the only brother that has wisdom. He needs to seek wisdom from others. And this is African. This is our roots. We always had the elders in our communities that we sought wisdom from. You know, I really believe some of us, we'd have better marriages if we had more input. You know, when you go to these weddings, it makes me upset to my core, Uncle Teddy, when I listen to these folks. Some of these preachers will say, keep folks out of your business. No, don't listen to that foolishness. You don't know what you're doing. You don't know how to raise children. You don't know how to be married unless you have guidance and wisdom, a mentor. I said, every brother needs friends. Got to have brothers that he can count on, celebrate with, laugh, cry. Every brother needs a mentee. Who's he pouring into? Who is he developing that helps you to stay out of trouble when somebody is looking up to you, you know? And then every man needs an accountability community. Some of the research we have found suggests that you are 95% likely to accomplish any goal, experience any major transformation or breakthrough if you have an accountability community that you meet with on a regular basis. 95%. And then, of course, last but not least, and I stand 10 toes down on this, especially if you are a son and daughter, you know, from sun-kissed shores of Africa. Man, we need therapy. We need godly, credible, licensed therapists of color who understand us. Because the amount of complex generational trauma, Uncle Teddy, that we have experienced requires of us that we must steward our minds and our emotions differently than white folks. They don't understand. See, listen, you know, most of us believe that white folks started therapy, but that's not true. They try to take credit for everything. You know what I mean? I mean, everything. Listen, we were doing therapeutic. Therapy just come from the word heal. There was healing modalities and relationships from the elders in our communities all the way back from Africa. White folks wasn't doing that. They had separated. They were believing in individualism. But we had always had folks that we went into the community, and we were able to sit with the elders and get wisdom. Well, now, because of the advancement of science and research and understanding of the brain and neuroplasticity and neuroscience, we understand what trauma is, and that your brain responds to triggers of trauma the same way it responds to as if your life is being threatened. That growing up as a Black boy in Cleveland, Ohio, it could change and alter your life expectancy by 20 years. Because of shifts that have happened in your brain because of what you have experienced growing up in the hood. And then on top of that, we ain't supposed to talk. We can never talk about it. The scripture tells us that, you know, that when we talk, healing takes place in James 5:16. And so this suppression of our emotions, it is a Eurocentric way of dealing with life. We were never this way in Africa. But colonization has taught us that we are supposed to shut up, be quiet, and press through, and it's killing us. It's killing us. And I agree. I remember, Uncle Teddy, I had to take my own medicine because I did all doctoral studies and things of that nature, did research, sat in these classes, but I had never been to therapy myself until about 6 years ago. And I'm going to tell you, man, I sat down with this brother in Cleveland, Ohio, black male therapist. And I can't describe it to you, except that being in a room where a man by law cannot say a word and is skilled in asking the right questions, man. And I think this is what a lot of brothers are afraid of. They're afraid of what vulnerability, what it might do to them. Mm-hmm. I went in there and I cried uncontrollably almost immediately. And I'll tell you why. It was because I felt completely safe to. And we do not have enough spaces that are safe for Black men to be vulnerable, to be human. Can't do it at home with the wife. Lord knows in our churches, they have some of the environment is not good. It's not, you got to be good to be at church, you know. You know, so this is, it's critical that we have this so that we can create healthy environments for our families.
You know, I actually got tricked into therapy. my wife went to this therapist. We were having some issues, and she went to this therapist. So the therapist called me and asked me, did I want to save my marriage? I said, I guess so. You know, at that point, I really wasn't interested in it. But tomorrow it'll be 52 years. So thank the Lord that I did. But she said, well, when can you see me? I said, well, that's the problem. I'm working like a dog. I don't have time to see you. Well, if you had time in your busy schedule, when would it be? I said, oh, it'd have to be like 6 or 7 in the morning. Well, can you see me tomorrow at 7? I put my foot right in my mouth.
Come on, she set you up now.
And so I went, and yet it was one of the most important things I ever did in life. Number one, she listened to me. You know? Listened to me. Because she knew me, she reinforced, you are an outstanding brother. You know, you're different than most doctors, you know? And then she ripped my butt. You know? And so we need that kind of stuff. The number here is 202-588-0893. We're talking about getting to the root. You know, we've been talking about men's health and we got the icing on the cake, because if we don't deal with some of the trauma, as Doc talked about, that has just covered us, smothered us, we will not be able to get healthy, you know. And so we want you to give us a call with your questions or comments. This thing is so important. You know, we talk about physical health, but in order to have physical health, you got to have emotional health.
Yes.
All right? You got to have emotional health. So I'm so excited that you're here. I've wanted, you know, Frank can tell you, I wanted to have you on for years. I've talked about it, you know, and I know that you're busy. You know, you're all over the world healing brothers. But I'm so happy that we have this opportunity. And so once again, the number is 202-588-0893, 202-588-0893. Let's go to the phone. Just call her. You're on the line.
Belated Happy Father's Day to you, brothers. Let me say something. What you have described for Black men is post-traumatic slave disorder. That's what we're suffering from, post-traumatic slave disorder. Racism is systemic and institutionalized, and white supremacy is live and well. And it's affecting Black men with their vision, their mission, their objectives and strategies. And that's why our economics, our education, our health, our housing and justice is at zero, except for we fill up the jails. And if you go to a jail and visit a jail and talk to the brothers, you ask them, what is the chattel slavery that they've gone through in their life? How did they get here? Hmm. And they'll tell you, oh, I went to receiving home in D.C. I've been to Mabel Glen in D.C. I've been in Forest Haven. I've been in Cedar Knoll. I've been in Oak Hill. I've been in Lawton Youth Center. I've been in Lawton. It's like a banner of honor. And I talk to them, and I look at them, and I counsel them, and I feel like knocking your head off your shoulders. But I love you, brother, and I'm going to tell you to knock it off, or you're going to die in jail. And who is taking, and the first thing I ask them when I have them in a meeting, who's taking care of your family while you're in jail? Mm-hmm. I had to work all my life. I was born in segregation. I fought my way out of it, and I take care of my family first. And that's and then the community second. And I'll get off the phone and let y'all, because y'all got me preaching. And thank you, brother.
Thank you, brother.
Thank you, my brother. Thank you.
I appreciate that brother's fervor and his passion, his love for our brothers and for our community. Shout out to him. I hear the love in his voice. I do want to respond to something here. There is something that we need to acknowledge. It's the elephant that is in the room. And I think the elephant that's in the room for me is our definition of manhood to me is a bit off. And it's not just off in the streets, it's off just about everywhere. You know, the streets get all the attention because it's the most debased and, you know, debaucherous behavior, you know, the drugs, the alcohol, the brothers are getting locked up. But, you know, there's also the successful brother who's been to college, who makes six figures a year, who lives in Montgomery County, who lives in Anne Arundel County, you know, he doing well. And you know, he may never go to jail, but he's dying too, because he has sold his soul to the American dream.
Yep.
And his family is dying, his soul is dying. And so the enemy has found a multitudinous of ways to enslave us to things or to the streets. And so the brother with the suit on feels that he is better than the brother who's wearing the suit and behind bars. But to me, it ain't no difference between the two of them. They both got a suit on, and they both are incarcerated. And they are incarcerated to a definition of manhood that was given to us by white supremacy, which is, I don't need help. I don't need to be vulnerable. I can do this all by myself. I can figure this thing out. And the only appropriate expressions of manhood is anger and a hypersexual drive. That's it. Did we not just hear Doc and Frank, of the former lieutenant governor of Virginia, who was a graduate of Harvard University, if I'm not correct, huh? Who was in his suburban home with his educated wife, and he went in there and blew her brains out, then blew his brains out with the children on the inside. There's some brothers from Southeast D.C. that's been institutionalized their whole life, more free than him.
Yeah.
The whole system is messed up, including the educated brothers. Many of them have spent no time, don't know how to be husbands, don't know how to be. And I'm a prime example. I was a pastor of a church and addicted to pornography. All I knew, I was a pastor of a church and spent more time at church than I did with my own family. I wanted to get respect, but I had no definition of what it meant to be a man. All I got was what I saw on TV and heard from others say. My parents split and they got divorced. And so then that put me at odds with my own father. This is what we are confronted with. And so if we do not have a base definition and understanding of what it means to be a man, I'll end by saying this. I use this experiment every now and then. I'll tell me what the definition of a woman is. And you know what they'll do? They'll say, well, a woman is essentially someone with a womb, someone that can give birth, you know, to children. You ask them what the definition of a man is, and then we get all philosophical. A man is somebody who is responsible, who has character. Now, I have a problem with that. Now, you just described a woman based on science. It's somebody with a womb. I agree with that. But when it comes to manhood, we start creating all type of different, you know, it get confusing after a while. Now, a man has a sexual appendage called a penis. That's what a man is. And he's born that way. Now, the question we need to be asking is, what kind of man are you? Mm. What kind of man? And how do you learn that type of manhood? Well, it's not taught, it's caught. And the more of legitimate men that I see, the more I will become a legitimate man. Mm.
The number is 202-588-0893, 202-588-0893. Let's go back to our phone. Just call her. You're on the line.
Good afternoon, Dr. Watkins. This is Rick Barco.
Good afternoon, Brother Rick.
I have two children, Dr. Watkins, which I have hidden from my mother, my brother, and my sister because of Secret Service, white, Jewish, black women, their games in my family going back to the 1920s. Didn't just start in my lifetime, but going back to the 1920s. Games around health and disability, hospital trust, homosexuality, and sexuality. I didn't want my children to go through that. And as a father, I thought it in their best interest that they remain hidden from my life there in Washington, D.C. I think being a man means you take care of your family as best you can. If you have a job, you spend the money on your family, your wife, your children. If you're struggling to get out of prison, stay out of prison once you get out. This is the best thing you can do for your family, to get out of a life of crime. It's your children, they watch what you do more than what you say. And if you are indulging in a life of crime, chances are they will follow. I'm done, fellas.
Thank you, brother.
Thank you.
All right. We got a couple more callers. I'm going to go right back to the phone. Yes, caller, you're on the line. Cut your radio off, caller. You have a comment or a question, caller? Let's go to the next caller, please. Yes, you. This is Dr. Watkins. We're on with Dr. Edmonds. Question or comment?
Dr. Watkins and all of you gentlemen on the program, I just want to say thank you for having this program. I am battling this with my own children. I appreciate the comments that the gentleman just made about the gentleman who committed suicide after killing his wife. That was my cousin's daughter who was murdered. Mm-hmm. And everybody thinks that people who appear to be okay when we're not okay. I have two instances in my life. I have a stepbrother who hung himself in his garage, and everybody thought he was okay because the rest of them were drunks and drug addicts and living their life out loud. But it's these young men and older men who appear to be okay who are most disturbed because of this false imagery about what a man is and the fact that they're not allowed to talk about these things. And I hope that we can develop some programs that we can present and call the churches accountable, because as we know, the largest population of black men is prisons, and the largest population of black people is in church. And if these two institutions are not presenting the solutions that we need for our people, then we can't sit back and blame others for making money off us if we're not taking the proper steps to educate and love on our people and stop criticizing each other over these stupid habits that we've acquired through this post-traumatic slave syndrome behavior that we've all adapted to just to stay alive. So I appreciate so much this program that you have, because we have a lot of cleaning up to do, but by the grace of God and the miracles that he's promised us, if we can just make a willing attempt to follow in God's path and laws, then I believe that this thing can be healed. And so I just, that was my comment, and I want to thank you all so much for this program.
Thank you very much.
Doc, I want to weigh in on my sister, and I appreciate her comments as well. Something that I think that we need to also pay attention to. In my research, all month long, we've been looking at men's health in the month of June. But I'm not sure if our callers are aware of this. Many of them may be, but it's important for us to realize that about 60% of men that die by suicide have no documented or known mental health diagnosis at the time of death.
Person.
Which is to say, as my sister articulated, there's often a shock that rings out throughout our communities when these things happen because we didn't see it coming. It doesn't mean that they didn't have an issue. It's just that we pay attention to men differently than we pay attention to women. We rarely even ask or check to see if men are okay. Like, for example, you said earlier, Doc, that the experience with therapy was because somebody listened to you. I'm telling you, I'm working with men on a regular basis, and a lot of brothers feel that most of their relationships with folks are transactional, which is to say, if they're not working, providing, doing this, doing that, then nobody care about how they feel. Nobody's asking them how they are doing. And I think as a community, we've got to be mindful of this. It is startling to think that brothers are four times more likely to commit suicide than women are. And that at the time of suicide, people are standing back and didn't see it coming. That's a failure, not only on the part of the individual who probably had some challenges but didn't get help, but also on part of the community who is not looking to check and see how we are doing.
Yes.
We're too busy. We've got too much going on. If we can have these kinds of numbers every 13 minutes since we've been on here already, that means we've had three or four brothers that have died by suicide, mainly because nobody checked on them to see how they were.
That's amazing. I thought about something that you said, which I remember. I was going to work one morning. It was early. It was in the winter time. I was up in Silver Springs, and I looked over it, and I saw, about 7 in the morning, I saw these brothers around this barrel, you know, with a little fire, homeless guys, laughing, 7 o'clock in the morning, just laughing and talking, and here I'm going to work with all these problems. No laughter. No, you know, I said, wait a minute, what is these guys got that I don't have? And I must admit, I felt a little jealous of them.
Yeah.
You know, because here I'm a doctor, but no joy, you know. And so we have to focus on the right things. And that's part of this health. You know, and brothers need to be educated, you know, that they can't have it. And I'm so excited because I see that's what you're doing. You're helping brothers to see that there is a way out. There's another way, but in order to get there, they got to change their thinking.
Absolutely. And I say the biggest change that needs to happen is that community is not a luxury. It is the necessity of manhood. The weight of manhood, especially Black manhood, is too heavy to carry by ourselves. And, you know, a lot of church folk misquote the scripture and they'll say, God doesn't put more on you than you can bear. That's a lie. Yes, he does. He does it all the time. He always gives us more than we can bear. Why? So that we will depend on him and that we will depend on community.
Yes.
Mercy, mercy. You always redefining what we've seen in Scripture.
Hey, and that's because it ain't working. Whatever we've been doing, it ain't working.
Amen. And I just want to thank you for that. Now you do seminars and stuff. What have you seen in these seminars that makes the biggest difference in these brothers?
Most brothers are looking for a safe space to be vulnerable, but they're expecting to be judged. And so, by and large, the majority of men don't have friends past the age of 35. So the loneliest man in America are typically married men or men 35 and up. And so there is a direct connection, you know this, Doc, between health outcomes, both mental and physical, and to what degree they have a network. And so one of the things we say all the time is your network is your net worth. There's research that talks about you are a few degrees separated in income, in health outcomes, in marriage relationships, in relation with your children, based upon the five people that you hang with. Who are the five closest people that you have in your life? That will tell me everything about what your life looks like. And so the need for brothers to get in the community, that's the biggest shift that I've seen that brothers are crying out for. And that one void, when it's filled, changes everything, changes their marriages, changes their relationship, their children, their health outcomes, et cetera, being in the right community.
So we there's so much more that we need to talk about. So we're going to have to come up with another date.
Let's do it.
You know, because this thing is so important, and it's important, not just for the brothers, it's important for the whole family, the whole community, the whole world. If someone wanted to get in touch with you, what's the best way for them to do that?
Just go to my website, www.myronedmonds.com. That's MYRONEDMONDS.com, myronedmonds.com. Or find me on any social media platform, YouTube, Instagram, TikTok, Facebook, LinkedIn. Just look me up. Google me, Myron Edmonds. Thanks, Doc, for having me.
Man, thank you for coming. Brother Frank, any parting words?
Let me see. I'm speechless because he was saying what was in my heart all the time. Thank you, Dr. Edmonds, and thank you, Dr. Watkins. And our team, including our engineers, Kalia Chapman and Byron Edmonds, and the WPFW staff, tune in next Monday at 2 p.m. for another episode of To Your Health. You can also listen to this and past episodes at wpfwfm.org/archives. Next up is African Deep Thought Edition with Brother Kaba. After that is To the East with Ambrose Lane Jr. Support for To Your Health comes in part from Dr. Theodore Watkins of the Watkins Institute. Dr. Watkins advocates holistic medicine and teaches lifestyle changes. Further information is available at twiliving.com.
Try and take care of yourself. Health is wealth. Vital is vital. You can't rely on nobody else.
The Haven Lounge is hosting an evening of jazz, R&B, and neo-soul on Monday, July 6, 8 p.m. and 9:30 p.m. sets at 1378 H Street, Northeast, Washington, D.C. Experience live music by Room 48 Band featuring Ine Nielsen coming out of Howard University. It's the perfect chance to kick back with friends and catch some killer live music. Details at eventbrite.com, Room 48, and on Instagram at Room 48 Band. WPFW is your station for jazz and justice, building a better world, one broadcast at a time.
Good afternoon. For WPFW Washington, I'm Darnia Samuels. Here are some headlines for this hour. The July 4th weekend marked America's 250th year of independence, but it also marked a milestone in the legacy of an American icon, Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. His childhood home in Atlanta, Georgia, officially reopened over the weekend after almost 3 years of extensive renovation. Dr. King's home is one of 38 structures included in the Martin Luther King Jr. National Historical Park, which was established in 1980. This park receives approximately 700,000 to over 1 million national and international visitors annually. Dr. King was born in his childhood home in 1929 and lived there until he was 12 years old. The home had been in his family since Dr. King's grandfather, Reverend Adam Daniel Williams, purchased it in the year 1909, living there with his wife Jenny and their 6-year-old daughter, Alberta. Alberta Williams later married Michael King, who moved into his wife's home, and they had their 3 children there, including Michael Jr., whose name was eventually changed to Martin Luther King Jr. Tours of Dr. King's renovated birth home, which are led by park rangers, are free to the public and last about 30 minutes. The tours are limited to 15 people and are filled on a strictly first-come, first-served basis. It's approaching 4.5 years since Russia's full-scale invasion of Ukraine began. Tensions between the opposing sides continue as Russia launched another major missile and drone attack on Ukraine overnight, killing at least 18 people and injuring at least 60 others in Ukraine's capital city of Kyiv. This attack was the second in a week where Russia unleashed ballistic missiles that were hard to intercept. As a result, Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky has called on the United States and other European allies to, quote, make strong decisions in supporting Ukraine's air defense so that their country can have tools to intercept the missiles that are fired at them in order to protect lives. These comments come ahead of the NATO summit, which takes place tomorrow in Ankara, the capital city of Turkey. In the D.C. area, people recognize the 4th of July weekend in different ways. One group ruffled a lot of feathers by their actions, though. Hundreds of masked members of a white supremacist group called Patriot Front marched through D.C. on the 4th, carrying Confederate flags and chanting slogans to express their views. The members, some of whom wore shirts saying "Reclaim America," marched near Union Station, Capitol Hill, and other areas before leaving the city on Metro trains. They were photographed on the trains, standing out among typical Metro riders because of their attire, being dressed in caps and white masks that completely covered their faces. Police monitored the demonstration and reported no arrests or major incidents, saying that the group was allowed to march under First Amendment protections. However, civil rights groups and others opposed this group's appearance in the nation's capital. Members of this group were last seen protesting in Virginia Beach over Memorial Day weekend. Lastly, school is out, which typically means no homework. But Maryland school districts have homework assignments of their own. To finalize policies on artificial intelligence, or AI, in classrooms by this fall. State education leaders say that districts need clear rules on how students and teachers can use AI tools like chatbots and writing assistants, especially as the use of AI technology continues to increase. Right now, guidance on AI use is different throughout Maryland, with some districts already setting rules and others still developing them. Supporters say that consistent policies are needed in order to help teachers and students use AI safely and effectively, while also making sure that it does not replace core learning skills. In today's weather, it's currently about 84 degrees in D.C. That's all for your headline news this hour. For WPFW Washington, I'm Darnia Samuels. Please be safe, and thank you for listening.